It's over. It's all over. The drought. The dam wall was busted. It's 62 long years.
It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
This is the Sports Desk Podcast right here on SEN. Hello all and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Desk Podcast here on SEN. I'm your host Ben Pascuzzi and alongside we have the adjusting mic Lucy Watkin. Lucy, how are we?
I'm good. You know, you've got to make sure it's in good position. Got a lot to answer, to talk about, so got to be comfy.
Got to get
but
comfortable.
No, I'm very well, thank you. Excited for some chats. Plus, on track.
Oh, yes, yeah. We are. We're back on track, yes. 2 weeks in a row, two shows in a row where we've actually kept to our preseason, what we wanted to do, which was every fortnight. So
plus, we had the
back
interview
on
last week, so
yes,
we're
did.
Doing well.
3 weeks in a row on the Sports Desk Podcast. Yep. Okay, so we've got a huge show, a lot of sport to talk about in this podcast today. So we've got AFL, and this could be one of the closest seasons ever, so we'll talk about that a little bit more. Cricket, got the Women's World Cup, and there was an interesting incident with Jason Roy of England. Maybe a potential rule change could be in place. There's tennis, Wimbledon's coming up. NBA has been huge with the draft and a lot of trades in free agency period there. And, of course, Formula One, Daniel Ricks going very well over there in Europe. So we'll start off with the AFL, and there's this new concept that's been floated around called AFLX. Now, is it 10 aside?
Seven aside on a soccer field, essentially. Yeah.
So this is like the AFL's version of 2020 cricket. And 2020 cricket's just blah. It's led to tennis. Remember they had the hot.
Oh,
four?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, there's like the fast tennis or
yeah,
whatever
fast,
it's called.
Fast four, I think it was. Yeah, fast four tennis. So there's all these little runoffs that have been caused by 2020 cricket. So the question is, Lucy, do we really need AFLX?
No. We don't need it. Like, I don't understand it as a concept. Mm. Maybe my mind would change when I saw it. When I see it, I should say, sorry. But the idea that's being floated is that the week after the regular season, you know, they have that bye now before finals, they're going to play AFLX with the teams that don't make it into the finals. And I think it's silly. Like, I think that game, that 1 week, that bye week, should be used for an AFLW game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that worked really well last year with the All-Stars game. So I feel like they should do that again. You know, keep the interest for the AFLW going. We had such a successful first season.
Yeah.
Give them another run before the season starts again so people don't forget who these girls are. You know what I mean? So give them a run in the thing. Don't need a new concept that, like, probably won't exist next year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
what do you think about it?
If you're going to do it, don't do it in that round 23 bye weekend. Have it as, like, I don't know, because they're floating around that clubs, like you said, who didn't play finals, they'd play in it. And maybe just have, like, another league in there. I'm not too sure how that work. Like, I personally don't like it. I don't feel we need it. I know what the AFL's trying to do. They're trying to reach out to larger markets overseas who actually like play on soccer fields because, you know, you don't really go to Europe and you don't see an AFL football field, field, unless you're in England or whatever. So cricket fields, footy fields aren't really common, so that's why they're going with the soccer field tactic. It may work, maybe just start it overseas or something. I'm not too sure, but yeah, that round 23 bye weekend, that really needs to, they need to do something better than what they've been doing. So the Legends match, I quite like it.
Yeah.
Have the AFLW match, but even better, instead of having an AFLX, why don't you just have like a State of Origin match or something?
Yeah, exactly. Like everyone said that. Like, yeah, have just the E.G. Witten's Legend Games on the Friday night and then do have that State of Origin, either whether that's men's or whether that's women's.
Yeah, I reckon do AFLW, do an AFLW one, then do a men's one.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it back to back. How good would that be at the G?
Oh, so good. I think, yeah. We're going to have to send this to the AFL. That's what I think. They need it here first. Exactly. They need to implement this. Yeah.
Yeah, but now AFLX, if you're going to do it in the off season. Don't do it in that round 23 bye because that's just makes no sense. And why would clubs put players to play this new brand of football postseason.
Yeah, well,
I think they're more likely to put him through, say, an All-Star match than play this seven-a-side game where they don't really know what could happen.
It's literally just kind of like nothing kind of thing. And
yeah.
I'm very lucky that I'm at the Herald Sun doing an internship at the moment, and I'm in the sports, on the sports desk. I went to a press conference with Nathan Buckley the other day, and his response to them asking him about it was just, I have no opinion of it. And then someone was like, well, if you don't make finals, will you be giving up, like, will you give up players for it? And he's like, I don't know about that. So,
yeah,
not really have a warm reception so far, but we'll see.
Yeah. Time will tell with that. All right, so we'll move on now from AFLX to the season. And this season has been one of the closest to date. And even this round, there have been three games which have been decided by 7 points in total. And that's not counting the St Kilda-Gold Coast match, which St Kilda are winning at the moment, at the time of recording. So, will this season go down as the closest season in AFL-VFL history, Lucy?
I think it will. Like, I think this is definitely the closest season we've seen in the last at least 5 years. Like, I think the stats that we were, that sort of inspired this question, a lot of them sort of harked back on 2013, which was a close season as well. But I think this will go down as the closest season we've had. Because what was the thing that we were talking about before in terms of the numbers of matches that, it was numbers of matches that have been decided by less than 3 points over the course of a season.
Yeah.
And 2017 is already leading.
Yeah, 2017's on par with... Okay, so 5 games this year have ended in 1 point results, which was the same number last achieved throughout the entire 2013 season.
Mm.
And the most 1 point finishes in recent years is 7, which was recorded in 2006 and included 2 finals. So we've still got 9 rounds remaining. If you include finals, that's 12 weeks of football to get more 1 point finishes. So,
which just, I think this kind of says to me that this is going to be. And like when you think it's like 2 games between now, like 1st and 16th, or maybe 2nd. Adelaide's the one that stopped a few.
Yeah.
But when you think of the number of games, like, it's so close.
It's ridiculous. I mean, Hawthorn knocked off Adelaide.
Yeah, exactly.
If you pick them, if you weren't the kiss of death and you picked them, then you're a freak at tipping. Because no one that I know picked Hawthorn to beat Adelaide there at Adelaide Oval. And Hawthorn were second last. Adelaide were second at the time. So... Mm. Or were they top?
Top.
Yeah, Adelaide were top. Adelaide were top. Hawthorn were second last now. Obviously, Hawthorn move up to 16th on the ladder with 20 points and Adelaide down to second. So it's just an incredible season. And not only is it close, it's also unpredictable, which is just great.
So
it's great for the AFL. And this is exactly the model that they built. So through the drafting and through the bringing in GWS Gold Coast, they've just... All these parameters that they've and all these regulations that they've brought in is just to make everything equal, to equalise the competition. And other than Brisbane this season, it's working.
It's
so
definitely working.
Even Brisbane are starting to look good, my boys. Yeah. But yeah, time will tell with
time
us.
Time will tell with them.
Yeah,
but no, it's definitely going to go down to the wire. Like, it'll be up to the last week that we will find out who makes finals.
Could we see a team say, you know? We'll check a stat for the next show. I just want to see what the lowest ranked team was prior to the final round starting that they made finals. So say like
it would have to be Sydney, like
10th or something prior to the last round, and then jumped into finals.
Oh yep, I get you.
You know what I mean?
But I think the biggest, like the one that'll be ludicrous, is Sydney. Like if Sydney makes the finals, they lost.
They'll
six,
make it.
Like, and they probably will. They're the number one in form team according to champion data of the moment
this season. Well, they were momentarily in the top eight. They were sitting in eighth after they defeated Essendon by 1 point with that last minute goal by Gary Rowan, and then the Doggies knocked them off after they just held on against North Melbourne, which we're going to talk about an incident in that match very shortly. So the Doggies are now in 8th, Sydney in 9th. So I see them making the finals, Sydney, because they're now 6-7 and they started the season 0-6.
Yeah.
So it's...
But it's crazy because it's like you
incredible.
Could still have Collingwood, Fremantle, St Kilda or Essendon joining like the finals.
You could even say Gold Coast, Carlton and Hawthorn.
Yeah.
Because from 16th to... From 1st to 16th, they are separated by 20 points, 5 games. So that's significant. Okay. But if you look from... Let's go from 7th down to 16th. 8 points.
Yeah.
2 games.
It's
incredible.
Incredible. So I think answering that question, this is the closest AFL season ever.
Technically, Brisbane is still a chance of making the finals. We're only 5 games outside.
They win all of their
We've been competitive in every single game, but we just cannot pull together more than 2 quarters of good football. So
it's a young group.
Another topic for another day. So we'll move on to the incident that happened in the Western Bulldogs North Melbourne match, which was Sean Higgins lining up for goal. Now, the umpire, the officiating umpire, he was about 30 metres to 40 metres off the play, maybe 15 or so out from where the man on the mark was, and Sean Higgins was lining up from outside 50. The umpire, he blew the whistle once, saying, "All right, Sean, start lining up, running in for your kick, doing your leading for your kick." Then he called play on about 3-4 times. Jake Stringer heard it, went to tackle him, and then as he's just before Jake Stringer tackled him, the umpire that was closest to Higgins then called play on. Yeah. So this is a rule that's sort of brought around with the shot clock, which was the 30 seconds. So does this rule need to be fixed, or could that have been officiated better on the night? Like, what do we think about it? Doesn't need to be fixed based on what we saw on Saturday night, last night?
I think it needs to be fixed in that it needs to be made clearer, like, what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, I think the umpires need to communicate a little bit more, and I think it needs to be made a little bit more obvious for the players. Because if you're the one taking the shot, you're probably not concentrating on what's going on around you unless you're, like, hyper-aware. And that's what it seemed like with Jake Stringer and Higgins. Was Jake Stringer was very attuned to the fact that Higgins had taken a while. So if you see the vision, you see Stringer put up his hands behind Higgins as if to say, oh, like, play on kind of thing, like, taking ages. And then the umpire says play on. Higgins doesn't hear him. He gets tackled down. So it seems someone needs to make it a little bit clearer. But I want to hear what you're going to say, because you are an umpire.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Well, obviously Higgins, he wouldn't have been able to obviously hear, and he couldn't see how long he had left, because usually the shot clock's up, but the AFL, they've taken off the 30-second shot clock for the final 2 minutes of matches.
Well, maybe they need to put it back for the final 2 minutes.
I haven't liked the shot clock in general, because all it does is it just tells players, okay, you got this long to kick it. They actually know how long they've got to kick it, which means they're going to be like, all right, I'm going to waste time. So say they're up by 2 points, 3 points. There's only 40 seconds left in the match. They got a 30-second shot clock. What are they going to do? They're going to run
but
it down.
But arguably, you would take all the time you can if that's how close
you
it
do
is.
It, you do it normally, do it but anyway. it just emphasises it even more. Okay, you just wait, rather than have the, wait until, because usually the umpire previously, they'd say, okay, move it on. That's when most players would do it. Yeah. They'd wait for the umpire to tell them to move it on. Now they wait till the shot clock, because the umpire tells them with about 10 seconds to go. So beside that fact, what should have happened is, because this rule's good, the 30 seconds. I like it because it keeps the game moving. What should have happened was the umpire who was officiating, he should not have been officiating at the time. He should not have been in control at the time, because he was way too far off the play. He was 40 metres, 30 metres out from where Higgins was taking his kick. The umpire closest to him, he's the one that should have been having the 30 seconds in his head and telling him, okay, you got 15 seconds gone, start going through your lead into the kick. That's what should have happened, because if they can't hear, because in AFL games, it is extremely hard to hear the umpires now.
Yeah.
Even in like local footy, you get players just wondering what's going on. If it's reserves or a seniors match, even some of those players struggle to hear us calling. And I'd like to think that we're talking pretty loud to them.
Yeah.
So obviously at home, we can hear the umpires. Out on the ground, it's a lot different. And there was about 28,000 there for a Doggies North Melbourne match. And if players, like Higgins said, and who was it? They were talking today on game day for Channel 7. Lockie Hunter. Yeah, Lockie Hunter. He was the man on the mark for the Doggies. And they both talked about it with Hamish McLaughlin and Lee Matthews on the show. Neither Hunter nor Higgins could hear the umpire. And Hunter was on the mark.
Yeah.
So
it needs to be communicated.
So it needs to be communicated more. So the umpires probably need to be next to them or something. But that umpire who was closest to Higgins should have said it. So that just tells you how loud it is at an AFL match. And imagine this was a grand final. 100,000 people. 100,000 at the G. And this happened.
That
could decide a grand final.
As Chris Scott's, I saw Chris Scott's quote. Like, he said our fans will be demanding answers.
Yeah.
Like, with things like that. So this is just like North and Western Bulldogs. Like, a bit of a throwaway game in terms of North, for North, but if it did was for Western Bulldogs, a pretty important game. But if Chris Scott is saying that, like, round 14 of the season, if it was in a grand final, you'd be pretty, yeah, you'd be pretty peeved off if that was your team and that's what happened.
Yeah, and that just
so
comes back to
communication.
Yeah, it needs to happen now. The who's the umpire's boss? Can't remember whoever the umpire's boss is. Needs to get it out to the umpires and tell them that, all right, we need to fish out this better. We need to get it clearer to the players. So what's going to happen is the umpire who's closest to the player leading for their kick at a set shot tells them how long they've got. Tells them when to play on, when their time's up. So that fixes it all up. Hopefully. Time will tell. Okay, so we'll now move on from AFL. It's a huge week in AFL. Ugh. Move on to cricket. And there's a Women's World Cup going on. So, Lucy, can Australia win our 8th World Cup title?
I think we can.
Yes, we can.
No, but we have a very good attack. We've had two practice games so far. We've had Elise Villani make 137 in one of those games. Elise Perry has made 100, and Alex Blackwell also has shown some class with the bat, while Sarah Ali got 4 for 16 in our second practice game, I think, against Pakistan. So we have a very good batting and bowling attack. The only thing that... Also, we're ranked number one. I think the thing that will play on the girls' minds is that we recently... Our most recent series against New Zealand, which was a 2020 series, kind of dropped their heads and lost two of the three games. So, also in England, so conditions will be tough. But I think Meg Lanning and the girls will come together and get a win.
Yeah, I think we'll make the final. Like you said, we are the top-ranked team. But, yeah, then again, it's in England. And past test series when we've played, and past one-day series whenever we've played England, they've always proved to be a tough opposition, particularly there in their conditions. So, I don't know. I think it'll be an Australian-England final. I'm not too sure about the pools and stuff.
Well, England just got upset by India.
Ooh, controversial.
And if you want to see a good photo, there is a photo of, I think it might be the Indian captain sitting on the sidelines reading a book while they're playing. So
that just goes to show you how boring cricket is.
How dare you?
And it's a wonder. Oh, I play cricket, so I can talk.
I feel like we're allowed to say that if like you love it. And
I
like
love
we
cricket.
Both love it, so
yeah,
I getcha.
But I reckon we can win it. Why not? I mean, we've proved to be such a successful women's cricket team over the past few years. We've changed our name to the official Australian women's team. It just makes sense.
Exactly. All these changes going through, I think a lot of these girls have hit their straps now, especially Elise Perry and Meg Lanning, Elise Villani, Alex Blackwell, Sarah Ali in the bowling attack. Like, there's just so many good names in there. Like, I don't see how we can't win our 8th World Cup.
Let's go win it.
Let's win it. Also, all the games are being broadcast on Fox Sports if you have Foxtel.
How
so get around
that?
The girls.
Yeah, Fox Sports providing the goods finally. Okay, we'll stick with cricket and we'll stay in England because there's an interesting incident with Jason Roy of England. They were playing a T20 against South Africa. Now, what happened was Roy was a non-striker. I think it might have been Joe Root who was the striker. He hit a ball to about backward point and Jason Roy thought there was a run there. Obviously not. What he's done is, so the bowler he was bowling over the wicket, and obviously Roy, he'd be around the wicket. So if you're watching the screen, the bowler was coming on the left side, Jason Roy was on the right side, over around the wicket. So Jason Roy, he was running down, obviously called, Joe Root sent him back. What he does is he crosses the pitch, he gets in line with the ball, and he makes his, as he's putting his bat down in his crease, he turns his face away from the ball, so he was looking at the ball when he changed his direction. The ball hit him, and the South Africans appealed for obstructing the field. Now, that rule's brought in, so say a player, it's like obstructing the ball, basically. So what happens is they deliberately go in line of the ball where it's going to hit the stumps, deliberately so it doesn't hit it.
Sort of like LBW, but if you were running between wickets.
Yeah, pretty much. So you're blocking the ball from its true path. So that's what Jason Roy did. So we're asking, should we keep this rule on the back of this incident? Is it a rule that needs to be stayed? Because last year there was all this talk about the man cad, where I think it was Bangladeshi bowler. What he did was, before he started his bowling action, the non-striker of whoever team they were playing against was out of his crease, he got him out. And in the rules, that's fair. So there was a huge debate about that. This is like another one of those traditional rules that have always been in place in cricket. So do we like it? Do we want to keep it?
I'm a real stickler for tradition. Yep. I don't know why, but the one that I always come back to is that, like, as ridiculous as it was, I love the fact that if it was a drawn grand final for AFL, you would play it again the next week.
I love that as well.
I know, I loved it. It was like a nice, funny, like, traditional thing that we have.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel the same way about this, where it's like...
We can talk about that. That's interesting, actually, that one. Mm. Yeah.
Where there's so, like, there are so many variables that come with doing this in terms of, like... They could throw it and you might be running and it just hits you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then I think also in cricket, it's very much, as they say, a gentleman's game.
Mm.
But to be inclusive, a gentle person's game. And there's definitely like etiquette and there's manners and all that kind of thing. And I think players know when it's not being done through goodwill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I feel like that's what sort of sets it apart. As a rule, is that players know when it's done in or out of, like, good or bad will. And you will see, like, with, for that example, the Bangladeshi, like, bowler one, there have been examples of, like, that happening to players and then them sort of being like, oh, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, also, like, walking kind of thing. So I think keep it just because the cricketers know the etiquette, they know their manners, and they know when and... when not to and when to appeal for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. I agree. We should keep it. I mean, you can pretty much tell from Jason Roy, I mean, he went across the pitch
exactly.
to get in the
he
line
made
of the ball.
Very obvious.
Yeah, it was extremely obvious. And that's what the rule's in play for. So, yeah, keep the rule. And, I mean, all cricketers, when we're running between the wickets, I'm told anyway, what we're supposed to do is if we see the ball and we're, like, going to make the thing, just don't stop. Just keep going.
Just go.
If you hit the ball, that's fine. What he did was completely different. Brilliant. He went across the pitch and into the ball. The second part was right. The first part wasn't. So it's a good rule. It's there for a reason, and everyone's kept to it. But that was a perfect case of what not to do.
Like,
so
deliberately running onto the side that the ball is on, so that the fielder doesn't get a good shot at the wicket.
Yeah, so he made it way too obvious, and he made it harder for himself to
get
exactly.
In. He would have made it back if he didn't do a weird diagonal. It was
stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
So exactly, that's why you keep these rules, because manners.
Yep.
If you do the wrong thing, most of the time you make it hard for yourself, and that's exactly what he did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very unfortunate. All right, we'll move on from cricket to some tennis now, and Jordan Thompson and Kokkinakis, Tanasi Kokkinakis, they had some very good wins. I think they beat Andy Murray and
Raonic.
Yep, both of them beating one of them. So should we start paying more attention to these guys rather than, you know, your Nick Kyrgios, your Bernard Tomic?
I think we should, like, to be honest. But then I'm also wary of the fact that Nick Kyrgios and Tomic got a few big scalps when they were coming through.
Yeah.
For example, Kyrgios in that Wimbledon 3 years ago when he made it to the quarterfinals or so, and everyone was like, oh my God. So in a way, I'm like, I think we keep...
Kyrgios is always going to be in the attention.
Yeah.
In the media limelight.
True.
And like, there's nothing we can stop.
We keep Jordan Thompson and Kokkinakis in sort of like our periphery.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Kokkinakis, he's been out injured for like the good part of a year. Maybe more than that. 2 years. He's just been off the scene, off the circuit. Just injured, I think, shoulder injury is all that. So he's finally back, and we've known when he burst onto the scene. I think it might have been 2-3 years ago, whatever, the Australian Open, when he went to... Or was it? He got a scalp.
I can't remember who
it was, but he made like third or fourth round, whatever it was. So we know his talent. He played with Nick Kyrgios when they were junior boys as double partners, and they made a couple of finals together against him in the boys. So, yeah, Kokkinakis, the talent's always been there. Jordan Thompson, he's kind of been in and out. He had a very good performance in the Davis Cup, replacing Bernard Tomic, obviously, because Tomic and Hewitt don't like each other. They've always been there in the shadow of those two. So, yeah, of course, I reckon we do need to pay them more attention, but it's never going to die from Kyrgios
like,
and Tommy.
Like, just hogging it, essentially. Yeah. So I think that's the hard thing for Thompson and Kokkinakis, is that they have to perform, you know, whereas Nick Kyrgios and Tomic kind of just, like, cruise through and we're all like, oh, look at them go. So I think we should, especially if they're both playing in Wimbledon coming up, they could be, I think, surprise packets.
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to check. Does Wimbledon start next week or the week after?
I think it's pretty soon. 3rd of July.
So next week. Ooh. Or the week after, technically. Okay. So we'll move on now from tennis to NBA. And the draft took place on, Friday. Friday morning for us. Yeah, Thursday night there.
Thursday night for them.
And the free agency trade period is open there after the conclusion of the NBA season where, surprise, surprise, Golden State won. Okay, yeah. We'll move on from the finals because, Golden State won. Kevin Durant, the snake, he got the MVP.
Yeah,
surprise, surprise.
Mm.
Okay, so there was a trade that happened, a very interesting trade that happened prior to the draft night, I think about 2-3 days before the draft. Boston traded the number one pick to the Philadelphia 76ers for their third pick and for a future first-round pick, which the 76ers got from LA. Now, that pick is protected from one to... So, it's for Boston to keep that pick, it needs to fall between 2 to 5 when they do the lottery.
Yep.
If it doesn't, so say if it falls from 1 or 6 and below, what will happen is Philly keep that pick, but they'll have to give up their 2019 first-round pick, which they got from Sacramento. So it's a very weird trade, but nevertheless, Philly got the man they wanted, and that was Markelle Fultz, who's a dynamic shooting point guard. He can play a shooting guard as well for the 76ers, because what they're going to do is they're going to play Ben Simmons, as Coach Brett Brown has been talking about for, well, ever since Ben Simmons got drafted. They're going to play Ben Simmons as the point guard, and we saw in Ben Simmons' college year, he's not that good of a shooter.
Yeah.
He's more of a passer, like you say, like Alonzo Ball from this year's draft, who was taken with foot by the Lakers. So what will happen is Fultz, he's the perfect complement to Simmons. He's a person who can play off the ball, fairly good defender, and he can shoot the ball more importantly. So he's kind of that real attacking type of player who can actually shoot, unlike Simmons, who... he can develop the shot as time comes, but they'll complement each other perfectly. And as the leaders of the backcourt for the 76ers, it's looking scary now. I picked the 76ers last season. Well, this season, I was like, okay, I'm going to the season. I'm going to pick my team. Because I had no real team in the NBA. I was just supporting all the Aussies. And as soon as Ben Simmons got drafted to the 76ers, I'm like, okay, here we go. Here's a team I can go for. And then, I started watching him, and then Joel Embiid just started getting my attention, and the way he started playing, I loved it. So I picked the 76ers as my team. And next season is going to be very interesting for them, because they've got, if they can stay injury-free, it's going to be extremely good. They could potentially go as high as making the playoffs. So they've got Markelle Fultz, obviously, Ben Simmons, Darius Saric, who could be potentially the MVP of the year for this season, Joel Embiid, if he stays fit. So there's your four. And they call them the Feds now, as Joel Embiid says. And there's also with Joel Embiid, there was an interesting stat. What happened was he's only played, I think, 700 NBA minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Guess how many tweets he's given out since? Because he was drafted in 2014, I think it was, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He's been injured in the league. He sent out 2,500 tweets.
I was about to say, I was like, 700 minutes, I'm going to like times that by 3. I'm going to say, 2,000 or so.
Yeah. He was drafted in 2014 by the Sixers, third pick. So, very interesting thing there. So, all was looking good for Philly. Do you think, we'll go back to the trade. I got a little bit sidetracked there. Who won that trade?
Sounds like Philly did, to be honest.
Boston, they picked up, there's Duke player. Tatum, that's right. They picked up Jason. Is it Jason Tatum? I'll check his first name. They picked up Tatum from Duke, who's a shooter, which they kind of wanted because they've got Isaiah Thomas, who's a point guard, who's he had a very, very good season this season past, and they didn't really want to bring in another point guard. So they're saying that they were always going to pick Tatum, and now they've got the man they wanted. They've also got a couple of an extra future first round pick. So
that's take that into consideration. I think in terms of, like, drafting, I think Philadelphia has been smart because you would say that they're one of those, like, up-and-coming type teams. They didn't make the playoffs this year, did they?
Philly?
Yeah.
No.
They didn't make the playoffs.
Boston made the Eastern Conference finals.
But then you have Boston, who's made the finals for their side of the the country or whatever. Still confuses me how they do that. But yeah, so Boston has won their final. So you would think that they're teams on two different ends of development.
Yeah.
But I'd say that it sounds like the 76ers have sort of sorted it out, and you'll see probably in 2 or 3 years them being a pretty prime team.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that. And usually you just don't see clubs trading number one draft picks. It's very, very rare. And the 76ers, they definitely won because they've got a player they wanted. And obviously it's too early to tell who's the winner out of this trade. But if Fultz turns out to be a player that he's hyped up as being, he's touted as being, then the 76ers definitely will go close to winning this trade, because you've got to take into consideration Boston there. They were the first seed in the Eastern Conference last season. They made the Eastern Conference Finals. They need to add pieces to keep going at LeBron and the Cavs, if LeBron stays, which we'll talk about shortly. So they got a player that they needed, Jason Tatum, in that small forward position. He's a shooter. He's very explosive. He can play that three position very, very well for them. He'll complement Isaiah Thomas fairly well, you'd say. So, and also for them, they got a future first pick. Now, what they're doing is Boston have, over the past couple of trade periods, they've been like wanting to get a big free agent. So they've obviously missed out on Jimmy Butler, because Jimmy Butler went to the Minnesota Timberwolves a couple of days ago, from the Chicago Bulls, that is. So there's still Paul George, who's available, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul now. They all are still available on the market. Obviously, Paul George, he's still signed with the Indiana Pacers, but he's told them that next season, next free agency, that he's going to look into going to the LA Lakers. So Boston, they've got all these pieces. They got all these heaps of future draft picks. They need to get an acquisition. So until they get a big player free agent, that's when I'll say whether or not they win. Because they just got so many picks and they're doing so well at the moment. As soon as they add one of those pieces, they're going to be close to getting
into
close
those finals.
Close to beating LeBron and ending his reign in the East. So yeah, that time will tell with that one. So we'll stick with the draft and move on to probably the loudest mouth in the NBA circles now, we can say. Now in the NBA circles, because this is LaVar Ball, father of Lonzo Ball, who was taken at the second pick for the LA Lakers. So the question is, will Lonzo Ball remain in the shadow of his father, LaVar, next season?
Oh, because LaVar's just taken everything. This was just so annoying, which is like, you were just surprised that, well, he's obviously a very talented kid because he went so early. But I remember my friend was like to me, you draft like Lonzo, you draft his father. Like, it's a package deal.
Yeah.
Which is just so, like, to me, in a professional sporting environment, that's just so annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was Lonzo, like, I'm sure he is, but, like, you'd be a little bit embarrassed that your father's out there saying, you know what, Lakers, they're going to make the playoffs now that they've got my son.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
It's like, incredible. Like, for
God.
On draft night, saying that.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to bet you Lonzo, he's going to take the Lakers to the playoffs in his first season.
In his first season, he's going to take this team to the playoffs. Like, LA Lakers, like, they haven't been bad, like, the last season, but it's a huge call. So I think Lonzo, like, if not, I just feel, I don't want to say he's going to be in his father's shadow, but I just feel like he has to tell his dad to maybe be a bit more quiet, because that's a lot of pressure on a kid.
Yeah, I think LaVar may start zipping it up a bit now that his son's been drafted, or one of his three sons has been drafted into the NBA and actually to the Lakers. Because LaVar's been very, very smart through the lead-in for Lonzo. He's like being this loud mouth so that people attract attention to Lonzo.
True.
Lonzo's a very good player.
True.
He's brought on similarities to Magic Johnson, and obviously Magic Johnson, GM of the LA Lakers. They're going to mingle and they're going to
blend well.
You would
think that there'd probably be a conversation behind closed doors now where they're like, okay.
If he keeps going on with his antics, I think Lonzo will remain in the shadow, as harsh as it is to say, next season. But I think Lonzo will develop into a very good player for the Lakers and eventually grow out of that shadow, because LaVar's just been such a huge, big loudmouth. He's one of those dads who are just like
living vicariously through their children.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like a stage mum.
Yeah.
But,
in a role of a father. Yeah. Okay, so last question on NBA. LeBron James, next season, he will be a free agent if he doesn't opt to stay with the Cavaliers. But there's been talk about this season that he could potentially leave. So Lucy, the question I pose to you is, what will LeBron do? Does he stay or will he leave? Well, this free agency period.
Considering what he's like, he'll probably just go join Golden State, you know. He'll be like, oh, yeah, I think they've got the upper hand on us now. He'll
do the Kevin Durant. Yeah, exactly. If you can't beat him, join him.
Exactly. So he might do that.
I hate that. Sorry.
So do I. Which is what LeBron James is known for doing, though. So good on him, chasing the winning teams, chasing his titles. But you would have to say that he started at the Cavs, went off, did his whole thing, came back and was like, I'm going to win them another trophy. And he did. Granted, he did do that. But I would just think he's old or whatever, but he is getting on. Like, he literally only plays in playoffs and finals pretty much now.
The thing is, though, you look at his numbers,
he's
still smashing so many records. And this season, this playoff run, he was the first player in NBA playoff history to record a triple-double. In the finals.
Well, that's the other point.
That's incredible.
He's so good in those situations that, like, but I'm just like, where will he go? Like,
he's 32.
Yeah, he's 32. So I just think he'll play out his career at the Cavs. Because I just think it's too late for him to leave now.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Like, I think he knows that he can't take on the Warriors because the Warriors just have so much firepower. Like, as good as LeBron is, and as much as you wanted to say that, okay, all the MJ talk is over now because he's 3-5, MJ did not play a team as good as the Golden State Warriors. This Golden State Warriors team could potentially go down as one of the greatest teams of all time. I mean, there could be a dynasty now with the Golden State Warriors. They could win 2-3 in a row now because they got Kevin Durant. And all these players are starting to hit. They're in their prime now. So they got Steph Curry, obviously, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson, which is talked about maybe potentially leaving. So they're just, they got so much firepower. So I think LeBron now, he recognises that he may not take him, and because there's been rumours going around that he may move to LA, and he's got a home in LA, that's where he lives, and that's where his kids go to school, and apparently his wife really wants him to stay go in LA. So I think he may leave. I think he may leave to the Lakers, and I think probably now, maybe next year, obviously in free agency, now's the time to do it, and there won't be that much of a grudge held by Cleveland because he's done what he's promised to them, and he's brought them a championship. If he didn't bring them a championship, and this would, and they've lost, say, 3 years in a row to the Golden State Warriors, if he left, it'd be the same reaction that the Cavs had when he left the first time, which were they were burning jerseys, they were just making a huge noise about it. So, I think he leaves. Unfortunately for Cleveland, I think he goes to the Lakers, who's a huge market there, and now Magic Johnson, who's very high up in the basketball court markets there. So I think he leaves, goes to LA, and because he's done his good deed to Cleveland. He's brought him a championship, so it's not? Why not leave? And he's gonna go to a team that's not winning. So imagine if he brings the Lakers a championship.
That would be, like, honestly messed up if he just joined a team and was like, let's do this, and then just took him.
Because Paul George could join the LA Lakers, and we all know how good he is. So they team up there in LA. Lonzo Ball turns out to be as good as he is. Yeah, who knows? The sky's the limit there. But, LeBron. It'll be interesting to see what he does.
It'll be interesting to see what he does and how much money he gets paid to do it.
Yeah.
Because it'll be astronomical, the amount that he gets paid for it.
That'll be one of the major reasons why he leaves.
Yeah, true.
All right. We'll move away from NBA. I think we went a bit too far before there. Got a little bit passionate there. Okay, so we'll talk about some soccer. At the moment, the Socceroos are competing in the Confederations Cup. We sit third at the moment with a win and a loss. A loss and a draw. That draw coming with Cameroon and that loss to Germany. It's a pretty good performance against Germany.
Pretty
we
good,
lost 3-2 and obviously 1-1 to Cameroon. We play Chile tomorrow morning at 1 a.m. You can call that tonight. Whatever you want. We're probably going to lose that, so I don't see us winning that.
No.
Chile are ranked fourth in the world.
Yeah.
So Socceroos, we're ranked 48th. So how long until the Socceroos move into the top 20 FIFA world rankings? Will it ever happen? Is the second part to the question.
I honestly don't think it'll happen for a good 10, 15 years, to be honest. Only because, like, I think it's great that we're getting a lot of, like, homegrown talent from the A-League. Like, yep. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, unfortunately, the standard of the A-League is not up to...
Well, it's improved dramatically since the start.
It's improved dramatically. Yeah. And maybe over the next 15 years it will improve so much that it becomes one of those known as a Premier League in the world, like one of those Premier Leagues in the world.
Yeah.
But when you're playing countries at the moment who are in the top 10, where all of their stars either play in the EPL, France's top league,
La Liga, Spain's.
Serie A, like you can't compete.
Bundesliga,
you can't compete with teams that are full of
players
that has just a packed full of just really, really good players. So,
and also second to that, you can't really compete with countries where they have soccer as their number one sport. So obviously here in Australia, it's not.
We're behind the eight ball in a lot of ways in soccer just because of cultural things.
Yeah.
But I think Australia being the country that we are and how passionate we are about sport and being the underdog and the best... Yeah. I think we could still crack it. Like, we got down to like 30-something.
We did,
a couple of years ago. So
it'll happen.
Hopefully, Ange has a grand plan, and we see ourselves in there.
Yeah, no, I reckon it'll happen. I mean, knowing Australia, like you said, such a sports-driven, sports-mad country. And
almost like overachieving for the size of our country.
Yeah, you know exactly. What I mean? Yeah. You don't think that. Like, whenever I watch the Olympics, I always see us... USA, China, and England as like the major big countries. Then when you look at population,
exactly.
We're one of the lower ones. So it's very strange. So, yeah. But nevertheless, I think we do. Year-wise, I kind of like what you said. Yeah, 10, 15 years, I reckon that's potentially where we'll go. Just soccer, just because it's now I think it's the most popular junior sport. Am I wrong in that? Yeah. It's the most popular junior sport. So 10 to 15 years, that's when you're going to start seeing the results from this huge wave of junior support, junior popularity for soccer. So, 10 to 15 years, I think that's a good time frame for us to make the top 20 rankings. So, time will tell, but I definitely think it'll happen.
Yeah, I think it
Let's hope so, anyway.
Exactly.
All right, we'll stick with the Australian theme and we'll move on to something we haven't talked about too much on the Sports Test podcast, Formula One. Motor racing there, and Daniel Ricciardo is the sole Australian flying the flag in the Formula One Championship this season. He's finished third on about three or four occasions so far this season. So, question is, Lucy, will he finish higher than third in a race this season?
Well, we did talk about this in terms of his car and the team that he's racing for, and it just seems that he can't crack number three. Because no matter how smart and how well he drives, the car just cannot push itself any further.
There's always either a Mercedes or a Ferrari in front of him.
Like, he just cannot push himself any further than what he's already doing. So it seems that he might be keeping the third spot on the podium warm this year, you know?
Yeah.
And if he's up there, at least he's chucking a shoey, you know?
Exactly. I honestly don't see him finishing higher than third unless there's just... the Mercedes and the Ferrari knock both of them out. Because we saw last year when, I think this was Spain. This was when Nico Rosberg was part of Mercedes. He and Hamilton knocked each other out after the first, I think maybe in the second or third corner. And Danny Ric was in front of most of the race. And then controversially, Max Verstappen, he was in his first race for Red Bull, got a better strategy than Ricciardo and won the race.
Mm.
Which is obviously to Daniel Ricciardo's dismay. Ricciardo went on to win another one, Canada. So, and that's when obviously the Mercedes, because they were the better car that year, they had mechanical issues. So this year the Ferraris have proved to be exceptionally well with Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Raikkonen. Raikkonen, although pipped Vettel for the second time only this season, qualifying at Azerbaijan for this weekend. So. Ricciardo, I don't see him unless something drastic happens with them.
Yeah.
Because the Renault engine in the Red Bull's just not good enough. I mean, their straight line speed is nowhere near where it needs to be. And the Red Bull car just doesn't look too good. Mm. So, in talking about how bad the Red Bull car is compared to Ferrari and Mercedes, does his future lie with Red Bull? I mean, he's talked about it a lot and he said, okay, I'm going to be with Red Bull, I'm going to be with Red Bull. But it keeps on, there's always these persistent rumours about him leaving. And there's particularly links with him joining Ferrari. Will that happen? Will he leave Red Bull? And secondly, could he join Ferrari?
I think he will. I think he will leave only because it would be so frustrating only finishing third. Like, being so close yet so far for things beyond your control would be so frustrating. So I would sort of think that he would be wanting to leave to join that better team so he can see himself have some success. He's a good driver.
Well, in my opinion, obviously this is biased, but this is an opinion held by many top F1 journalists. Danny Ric is the best driver out of all the drivers. So obviously he's not in good enough a car to really show that, to prove that he's the best driver. So I think he is. A lot of people have backed that up. So if he, because going into this season, he actually said that, okay, my goal is to win a championship.
Yeah.
And obviously you want to hear that, but he was really genuine. He said that a couple of seasons ago, each year with Red Bull, because Red Bull, with Sebastian Vettel, they won four in a row back in like 2010 to 2013. So they've gone downhill since the new engine regulations, where it went down to a V6 engine, all this economical crap, pretty much. The engines have just died down. So yeah, I'll say that. So if Red Bull, if he continues to have problems with Red Bull, like say, if he doesn't win a Grand Prix this season, purely because the Mercedes and the Ferrari have always been there and his car just is not fast enough, I think he'll become frustrated and will leave. And I'm a bit of a romanticiser, and I think he'll go to Ferrari because Kimi Raikkonen, he's on his last legs. And is, even going to this season, there was talk about Ricciardo joining Ferrari with Ferrari not re-signing Raikkonen.
Well, Raikkonen drove with Schumacher, didn't he?
I'm not going to say anything on that because I can't remember.
Because I feel like he's been around that long. Like, he was like the...
I think he raced maybe 1 or 2 years with him when it was to the twilight of Schumacher's career with Ferrari.
Yeah, like he was like the Schumacher's protege, essentially, with Ferrari. So he would definitely be
coming to an end. Yeah, he was racing with him.
Yeah.
Like, that's for certain. So, because Raikkonen... He hasn't been performing too well for a Ferrari in his second stint with the team, and this season he's only produced the pole at Monaco, and where obviously Sebastian Vettel got the better strategy there. Raikkonen came second. So if Ricciardo decides to leave Red Bull, I say Ferrari take him. And if Ferrari take him, I'm going to come out early and say Ricciardo will win the championship for 2018.
Ooh, that's a big call. But I can see it.
The Ferrari, because Sebastian Vettel has proved to be, it's going to be, this season's championship is a two-horse race between Lewis Hamilton of Mercedes and Sebastian Vettel. Ferrari is something we haven't seen because there's always been the two Mercedes. If Ferrari can still have the same engine, the same power, produce the same kind of car that Mercedes are, and Danny Ric goes there, he wins the championship for me. Because he's just a far smoother driver than a lot of the other drivers in the Formula One.
And that'd be great to see an Australian win another.
Yeah. Because we haven't seen one since, Jack Brabham, all that in the past. So, Mark Webber came close. So, it'll be interesting. Time to tell. So, let's hope Danny Ric does well tonight in Azerbaijan. Unfortunately, he qualified 10th because he hit the wall. He lost the rear tyres going into one of the corners there at the Baku circuit. So he's starting 10th tonight. So it'll be fun to watch. Hopefully he does well.
Long road ahead.
All right, that was an extremely long podcast this week. Just a lot of talk. I sort of got sidetracked.
We got caught up.
We went to NBA. So we had to catch up for all those weeks we missed earlier. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, anyway, we hope you've enjoyed listening to us this week. We'll be back in a fortnight's time. Lucy, won't we?
Yes, we will.
We'll stick to that.
We will.
We'll try and get
I'm
back on track.
I'm playing at home
anyway.
Again, so like, you know.
How have you been going anyway in the footy?
Lost today. Last week. But top five make the finals apparently, and we're still a good chance with five. So we're coming, you know. White horse is coming.
Let's go, white horses.
Let's do it.
Anyway, from all of us here, we hope you've enjoyed listening to us this week on the Sports Desk. We'll see you in a fortnight. Do obviously tune in to the weekly version of the Sports Desk, Monday, Wednesday and Friday, 9 to 10 a.m.
You got it.
I got it right. Okay, so from all of us here at the Sports Desk, we hope you've enjoyed listening to us today, where we've talked nothing but sport, the games which unite the people of the world.